Hi, I'm Helen Please, and welcome to this very special episode of The Cyber Show. Today is Friday, the 28th of July, 2023, which of course means it's International System Administrators Appreciation Day. What, I hear you say? That's right. Every year, we set aside a day to say thank you to the people who keep all the computers running. When the internet goes off and you run around feeling like the entire world just ended, the person that fixes it, that's a system administrator. Most of the time, sysadmins, as we call them, are totally invisible. Because so long as they keep stuff working, nobody seems to notice they exist. Silently, they work hard to keep our electricity working, the trains running, the planes flying, and our hospitals and schools functioning. Worse than simply being ignored, because of the appearance of big tech, overcomplex bureaucracies, AI, and algorithms that treat people with inhuman disrespect, sysadmins are increasingly blamed. They take the blame for failures that reside in the financial, managerial, and policy layers of technology, by people who have scant, if any, actual knowledge of the technology. Many sysadmins work unholy hours. They are always on call. They often leave their families or their social lives at the drop of a hat. They drive to data centers on a deserted industrial park in the middle of the night so that you can keep using your online banking, the vital app that monitors your health, or just your favorite dating app. Who says thank you? We do. Started by sysadmin Ted Kakatos, since the turn of the millennium in 2000, on the last Friday of June, we put a massive shout out to sysadmins the world over. And it's also a very special day for us at The Cyber Show. Some of you will know we've already been recording and broadcasting for a little bit of time, but we decided to mark this very special day by making it our official launch day. And we've kicked it all off with a big party in our home city. Some more on that later. But today we're launching with a special episode. And for that, we've interviewed some sysadmins in different types of organization and industry. You'll also hear us reflect on some of the deeper questions around the roles, responsibilities, and respect offered to our sysadmins. Matt, can you just explain to us who you are and what you do?
Hi, well, I'm the systems administrator at Mayflower Theatre and Mars Mayflower Studios in Southampton. And I have been a systems administrator here for, well, this is my 21st year, so that's quite a significant amount of time.
Wow, yeah, you're a real expert in system administration, I think, worldwide at this point.
Right.
Starting out my IT career circa 2018, the personalities of the company I worked for was, no matter how hard you work, you're not getting a pay raise. So if you want a pay raise, go elsewhere. It's like, okay, well, what happens if you like the company? Giving yourself a disservice by making that move on the board.
Right, exactly.
Versus, you know, spreading your wings and going to another organization.
They're living on their reputation to mistreat their employees, right?
Right. And the whole marketing thing for that company was to seek out real young people. At the time, I was 20 when I worked there. If you're there as a young person, they didn't hire anybody older than 30. So it was like really a disservice for people who are wanting to cut in. Turned into the idea of, how do I get into IT if no one wants to hire me? Well, that's where people like myself come in, where we train people or talk to people, show them how to do certain things, and then market it onto a resume, a portfolio, and stuff like that. Right. So that's where that thing came in for me to be a proponent of training, because if you don't train people to think like a technician, it's a hard transition at the end of the day.
So the Mayflower Theatre, so you work in the creative industry. Does that bring more challenges or less challenges to your job? Because a lot of the time when you talk about IT in the creative industry, people think that you do less in IT, but I don't think that's the case, is it?
No, not at all. So the thing is with IT, in my particular, the field, the creative field, is that it is different and it's not different, if that makes any sense, because you still have day-to-day like office users, but then you have specialist systems that aren't used elsewhere. So we have systems obviously for selling tickets, and those are very specialist, but we also have things like Office, you know, Office and SQL Server, Exchange, and we still have to back those things up.
Switches and patches, yes, and cybersecurity and all the normal things that you have, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like I went back in time on some things with this job versus when I was a Windows sysadmin. Coming to this company, it's a million times different, and I had to retrain myself to rethink on how to do everything. It was pretty much like needing the training wheels again, if you would.
I have some experience of that, right? Because I've been a Windows girl all my life, and I could do a little bit of scripting and a little bit of this, but I went to uni a couple of years back to do a master's degree, and suddenly it was like in cybersecurity, and they were like, you need to learn Linux right now, and you need to be like really, really good at Linux right now, like within a week, go. So it was like starting again, just like, you know, it was like MS-DOS back to those days. For me, I am older than you, I think.
Yeah, I'm a young cat. I'm only 26, so it's definitely exciting to be where I'm at now, because I couldn't say back when I was 20 that I would wind up as a Linux sysadmin. I never imagined it until it happened. So it definitely became kind of a huge challenge of how much are you willing to learn and how are you going to train yourself to, you know, be proficient?
So in your 21 years in sysadministration, has the job changed in that time, in the 21 years that you've been doing it? Because a lot of system administrators, it will say on their paperwork and things like that, that they are manually updating things. But I'm not sure that's the case 21 years later in 2023. So how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it definitely has changed. So obviously when I first started, there was less of an emphasis on cybersecurity and things like that. In fact, I remember some early training that they would often say, you know, obviously a lot of companies don't have time to patch systems and to apply latest service packs and things like that because they can't afford the downtime. Which obviously seems rather strange now, because you have to do updates. You have to do them pretty much as soon as an update is released. Obviously, you might wait a few days just in case they pull it. But obviously, if you don't stay up to date, then you risk all your systems.
Very exciting to be in part of the tech world. It's more thrilling getting to work with other people that are in different companies and just help them out to pretty much make their company more stable. If they don't have the funds for, say, a full-time database admin or this position, we at least have positions that can do that.
And it's really good to have someone who's just gone into the industry as well, because we've spoken to another person who's been in it for a while, and it's really good to see that after 21 years, that excitement that you're feeling right now is definitely still there. So that's some good news for you.
So when you started 21 years ago, would that have considered, you know, been more the sort of thing of you physically go up to your on-premises servers and things like that?
Oh,
and
wow,
the
yeah.
Firmware, you know,
definitely.
CMD style PowerShell.
So that is another thing, is that in the old days, you'd have actual physical servers for every single role. And I have literally have virtualized all of our servers here. So we actually exist in sort of like a hybrid configuration. I've been using a product called VMware, which is a hypervisor, so for virtualization. And I started using ESX 3. We're now on ESX v7, I think. So at the time, obviously, if something went wrong with a physical piece of kit, it would be an absolute nightmare. Whereas now with virtualization, you can run multiple machines on just a few bits of tin, and you can also take snapshots, back those up, and restore very quickly. So that's brilliant, because it means that if something goes wrong, you can apply a patch, where you take snapshot first, apply a patch. If something goes terribly wrong, you can just revert. And it's just amazing.
So it's made your job easier overall, because what can go wrong has lessened.
In a way, yes. And I mean, one of the things is obviously pushing a lot of the stuff out. So we've got, as I said, it's hybrid configuration. So we've still got a few things that are on-prem, but those are running in almost like a private cloud, because we've got those servers running on VMware. Mm-hmm. But we've also got presence in the cloud through things like Microsoft 365, mm-hmm. which some of our on-premise servers, such as Exchange and SharePoint, have now been moved to those platforms. However, what got me was when we first moved, is I was always under the impression that things like Office, at the time called Office 365, was literally just Office and that was it. Having moved to what's now called Microsoft 365, it's every day I'm discovering new things about that platform. And there are various admin centers. You've got, we do a lot of SharePoint stuff in the organization. We now have like Power Apps. We have Power Automate, Power BI, known as the Power Platform on Microsoft 365.
So do you use the Microsoft services quite a lot? So you
Loads.
Wow. So that's another job title in itself, isn't it?
It is, technically. And in fact, I think, although you can still use the term system administrator, I think the role has changed very much now.
So what industry are you currently a Linux sysadmin in? Like, what does your company do? Is it tech or like in health work care or?
Yeah, I kind of hopped around. I started out my career in the tech world where it was an MSP. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of Microsoft services. I was an Azure support engineer for 2 years. And then, of course, I went back into help desk as a tier one, but I was out doing the tier two folks. And then now I'm back into the MSP world where we do like database solutions, cloud solutions, VPN solutions, you name it. We have folks that are administrators, whether it be like databases, depending on what software or language they have. Pretty much teams for like Oracle, MySQL, Postgres, and the list goes on. There's a lot to it. Yeah. So we tend to help out companies with their IT solutions. So in my position, I don't necessarily get to work with all the clients, but if they have like a VPN, sure, they'll get to meet me once or twice, but that's about as far as that goes.
So how's the role changed in the last 21 years from?
Some of the things are almost programming. And I mean, it's not just that. We do a lot of networking, backing up systems, telephony. That was another thing, which has also changed, because at one point you had an on-premise switchboard, but now the switchboard actually resides in the cloud. But you still have to manage it, still have to administer it.
Do you feel that you have more things to manage? Maybe it's easier to do so now because you are using VM and a hybrid model, but is it that you're managing more systems than you were 21 years ago or less?
Although the role has evolved, I would say it's just as complicated as it used to be.
If not more complicated.
In a way, yeah. Yes, because there's actually more things to do and more technologies. It's just that you don't necessarily have the on-site physical hardware anymore. It's more of a, where is it? It's in some data center somewhere in the UK or maybe in Europe that you don't actually know where it's located.
We tend to go for smaller companies when we make partnerships. So if we're going to sell a service, we want to make the biggest impact for a small scale service. So that's where all the Linux systems came in, like Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Mm-hmm. I worked with Rocky Linux and CentOS. So it's those are probably my favorite ones for commercial use. And then if I were to go personal use, if you're wanting to like learn it, probably my favorite Debian desktop environment would be Parrot OS, because right. Then you can do all the security operations like Kali Linux,
right.
And do all the threat or pen testing, threat analytics. You can use it as a honeypot. There's just so many different applications with that operating system that makes it so versatile as an open source project. It's just unreal.
It's so good. So, it's my favorite.
Yeah. And it's probably one of the easiest ones to get working off the ground too. So if you had like an old laptop, even some of the older Macs, you can run ParrotOS on, or PopOS is another good one if you just need a basic desktop environment that's similar to macOS.
In the UK especially, everybody just uses 365, so it gets really boring. I'm like the only one with three or four, you know, Hyper-Vs Linux on at the moment, and I'm like, oh, just load it up here and I'll just edit that for you. So yeah, it's a novelty over here in some areas. But then you've got like whole cybersecurity and database teams, and they live in that Linux environment. So we're a little bit behind, I guess, there. We're catching up.
So you said, you mentioned that cybersecurity has become a bigger part of the role in the past 21 years. Is that something that is sort of creeping in more and more as the years go on? Is it something that you've seen in 21 years get worse generally or get better generally in terms of our safety and our systems in your job?
So years ago, what you would do is probably patch your servers or your desktops every couple of months, if that, and particularly servers, it might be like every quarter or something like that. Now, I mean, you can't risk it, really. You have to do it as soon as those patches become available. And one of the biggest concerns is actually your users, your internal staff. I mean, we do a lot of training with the staff on identifying phishing emails. Those can be a big issue, you know, with malware and CEO fraud, I think that's what it's called. So, you know, somebody could send you an email and say, I want you to transfer this money immediately because the CEO requires it. You know, it can be a spoofed email.
Yeah, a whaling attack, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. And those things years ago, you didn't have to worry about. But now that's a major issue. And obviously, if your staff aren't familiar with it, they haven't got the knowledge of how to deal with it, then that's a huge security issue.
So you say that having an educated workforce in terms of its IT security is an absolute vital and an absolute
must. Yeah, they're basically like a human firewall, if you will.
Have you heard of International SysAdmin Appreciation Day?
Yeah, I've actually heard of it years ago. I think I was working at Amazon as a delivery driver when I first heard it. So I already started my IT career because this was during COVID. And there was a lot of challenges during that time. So hence why I was driving for Amazon versus working in the tech industry. Mm-hmm. Every time that day would come around, I'd mark it going, one of these days I'm going to be a sysadmin and I'm going to do something great. And, you know, several years later, finally hit that milestone of becoming a sysadmin this past year and stuck with it and learned quite a bit. So I'm kind of fortunate to get to share this moment with the podcast.
So as we move into the next 21 years, for example, of being a sysadmin, how do you think that that's going to change with the advancements in computer processing, quantum computers, and AI technology?
To be fair, I haven't delved that deeply into AI. I mean, I have, as everyone has, dabbled with like ChatGPT and some of the AI image generators, and it's pretty impressive. I still think it's in its infancy. Certainly, I've noticed, actually talking earlier about Microsoft 365, I've noticed even on some of their products, they've got the new sort of Bing-based AI options. I think they call them like Copilot or something like that, which sounds interesting. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but certainly, yeah. I don't think it's going to replace my job. I think maybe it will be that we'll still manage the AI if it becomes more mainstream.
Do you feel AI will impact your job going over the next 10 years or so?
I was actually talking to one of my old friends about this I used to work with, like automation technologies and AI and how advanced things are getting. Because my last job, we were very big on automating pretty much our help desk team, pretty much out of work. The only time you'll be involved is if it's a break it, fix it type issue. So if it's software-wise, licensing or any of that, all that's automated. The only thing that's not automated is putting RAM into a laptop or a new hard drive and re-imaging it. SSEM and Autopilot with Intune with Microsoft, that is a very strong automation system that I've worked with, and hats off to Microsoft on that one. That's probably one of my favorite tools that they've made recently is Intune. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a little older than what I think, but with AI, I can see AI being able to, you know, write code and make automations happen with all the software on the back end. So like spinning up VMs or putting in servers and imaging servers, I could see all that being pretty much taken over by AI. But if something major breaks, I don't think AI would be smart enough until an actual robot that can actually open up the chassis of the computer or the server and put RAM or remove the broke RAM or whatever's broke to make the server run again. So that's kind of a hard thing to think about, but that's would be my biggest guess.
In terms of quantum computing and things like that, that is a bit scary because they reckon that quantum computing will be able to like break encryption very, very quickly. So obviously, where does that leave us? And things like banking and website security.
And I guess our own network security transactions you mentioned earlier, all at risk.
It is. I don't know how that's going to... there are already talks about post-quantum computing encryption and things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there is work going on there. And I'm sure by the time it becomes mainstream, then we will have solutions. It's like a lot of things, people panic early on.
I think it's the opposite to that. They sort of panic post when it's already a problem just becoming mainstream.
I guess so.
I think this time with AI, for example, we are on it. We have released it, and straight away, even the CEOs of those companies were very much sounding the alarm that hopefully we will get regulated in time. You know, with shows like The Cyber Show, hopefully we can put some more pressure on the bodies that be to try and speed that up, because if they don't, we're all in quite a lot of trouble.
Another thing I could see, especially with how AI is becoming really widely used for like people writing like emails that are super professional. Mm-hmm. I could see like different cyber attacks, like whaling and phishing becoming really difficult to tell.
That's already the case. So within a month of that coming out, most of the phishing, high-level phishing that's being written by ChatGPT, pretty terrifying how quickly that's developing. So I had a conversation with an architect, a cybersecurity architect for quite a big company here, only 2 years ago, where he said AI was not going to impact cybersecurity. And I was already reading research showing that that's already the case. And it's just hit us within the space of about 3 months. It already completely devastated the system. They're writing high level malware on it now as well, and they're getting through our security defenses as a result. So for us, it's going to be a massive change.
I'm not sure how this is going to affect like the different types of attack, like rainbow attacks, brute force attacks. Probably my biggest advice with all this cybersecurity talk is always pick up a 2FA physical token, like a YubiKey.
Absolutely.
Always secure your social media and all that stuff. So that's probably one of the biggest takeaways that I give to anybody is always have a backup, 2FA. But I'm wondering how that's going to affect it, because I think, especially with ChatGPT, I've never worked with it or touched it. So I'm kind of a proponent of I'm not a huge fan. I'd rather learn it and be able to do my own things by myself, so I have my personal touch to it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm curious if it could generate fast enough to break through trying to brute force in.
Yeah, I can imagine it speeding up pretty quickly, actually. Supercomputing is getting a lot more obtainable.
So Matt, have you heard of International Sys Administrations Day?
I have, but only in the last couple of years.
What have you heard about?
Not a lot. It actually started more of as a joke. Somebody said, I think somebody in the office or something said to me along the lines of, hey, do you know they've got a day about your job? So, I was like, oh, okay, that's very interesting.
That's because you are needed by every company and every business. You are the bread and butter of all sales, which is the bread and butter of most companies and the economy. That's the most important thing. We do need to appreciate our system administrator. Without you, the world would not be possible.
Have you heard of International Sys Admin Appreciation Day?
Yeah, I've actually heard of it years ago. I think I was working at Amazon as a delivery driver when I first heard it. So I already started my IT career because this was during COVID. Mm. And there was a lot of challenges during that time. So hence why I was driving for Amazon versus working in the tech industry. Mm-hmm. Every time that day would come around, I'd mark it going, one of these days I'm going to be a sysadmin and I'm going to do something great. And, you know, several years later, I've finally hit that milestone of becoming a sysadmin this past year and stuck with it and learned quite a bit. So I'm kind of fortunate to get to share this moment with the podcast.
Do you find that people appreciate and understand what you do as a sysadmin?
It depends on the company, really. I've worked for a couple different companies. Some companies really appreciate their system administrators, some not so much. And it's one of the things that it's a kind of the behind the scenes type role where not everybody's going to know you by your name, but you are the glue that holds that company or organization together.
I actually do enjoy the job. It's great. It's it can be frustrating at times and particularly stressful. It's not often, but some days you'll have something that will just break and then your whole day is ruined or several days are ruined. But luckily, it's not that often.
You really have to dive in and get deep with what systems are important and make sure that those systems, if any failures happen, that you're willing to go the extra mile to make sure that it's back up so that your business continues to be productive if anyone needs those systems that are crucial. Mm-hmm. My current company, they appreciate us. We're a team of four. Mm-hmm. And we all kind of blend in behind the scenes, but when we get recognition, it's usually over some big feat or a big project of integrating something new for our company, like a new monitoring service or new security implementation, antivirus software, where it just goes company-wide globally. Those are usually the moments that take the most time, but once it's done, it's a beautiful spectacle of what we do for our company or for our people to make sure that they are safe working for us and making sure productivity is at an all-time high.
Do you find that people appreciate and understand what you do?
Yeah, so some people do appreciate it, I think. And I think I've been lucky because a number of my bosses that haven't been IT specialists have known how important it is to the business, which has been great. But there's also, you know, there's people that I think literally think you're there to fix printers and things like that, which is not so great.
or change a light bulb.
Exactly.
Of the staff entitled.
Yeah, something completely different that's not IT related at all.
Can you change the bin for me, IT person? You're like, I'm busy like updating your entire phone system.
Exactly. Exactly. I know.
How much do you use scripts? I guess that you're Linux, so that's probably all the time. But do you find that you're often downloading some of those from somewhere else, like GitHub, or do you just create all your own?
I'm about 50-50. When I was in the college or university, depending on what side of the world you're on, of course, I was a computer science major. And so I was wanting to become a software web developer type. The biggest thing about that made this urgency of using scripts was at my last job in learning how to automate with PowerShell. Automating with PowerShell made my job 1,000 times easier because I was the subject matter expert of identity and identity for our ERP and our domain controllers. So everything user account wise, whether it be ERP or our Windows side at the time, I ran scripts to do it so I can do 50 users at a time. That one I built from scratch.
How often do you use scripts and self-designed automation to smooth your job?
Ah, now that's very interesting. So I have created a number of PowerShell scripts in the past, and recently, in fact, since moving to Microsoft 365. No, I'm not advertising Microsoft here.
After one of our episodes this season, it's probably okay.
But yeah, since we've moved to Microsoft 365 and their new Power Platform, we've been doing a lot of things based on Power Automate, and that allows you to automate processes, connect to different APIs, integrate various systems. Yeah, it's great. Really good.
Coming to my current role, I do use something called Ansible Playbooks. Especially if I'm like spinning up a new server, whether it be on AWS, Microsoft Azure, or any cloud, mm-hmm. we have a Ansible server that we can pretty much deploy a brand new server on AWS or Azure, mm-hmm. and we can connect to it and give it whatever software we need it to have. So if it's going to be like a email server, we'll have like PostFix on it, mm-hmm. as an example. Another example is if we're going to do an IPsec VPN tunnel, we'll run LibreSwan on there. And then from there, we can run the left side and the right side to make the tunnel and complete the tunnel. Nice. So those scripts, a lot of them, we have a bunch of generic ones, and then from there we add to it as we see fit. We have our own unique folders. So I script quite a bit. Probably my recent project was one of my automations with Google Apps Script. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, mm-hmm. but it's similar to JavaScript. So if you're working with like Google Workspace or trying to query results of like how many users you have or what users are disabled, you know, for auditing purposes. The Google side of things tends to add a bunch of extra characters. So if you're putting it in like a database to query from,
yeah,
automatically it is just awful to work with.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of it. I wish it was a little bit more user-friendly.
Do you deeply understand what you do? Or sometimes do you just take the easy path when you're writing scripts? So for example, downloading maybe an untrusted or uncertificated script that you found online in a forum?
Generally, I won't just download and run a script I'm not familiar with, even if it's potentially from a reliable source. I'd rather look at the code, generate the code myself, then you have an understanding of how it works for future. And it's a learning exercise, you know, you'll create something from scratch, you feel like you've accomplished something at the end and gain knowledge.
And it's proprietary stuff, you know, your company then own that.
I actually had my script just completely give out on me recently, and I had to rebuild it from the bottom up in order for it to work properly. So that was definitely an interesting thing to happen or witness to happen.
At least you have those skills to be able to fix your script when it breaks, because if you just download them all from GitHub and you're surviving like that, if your script breaks and you can't find another one, that's it. Game over, really, isn't it? And there are too many sysadmins, I think, out there in smaller companies, particularly that probably rely on GitHub a little too much. So it's really refreshing to hear people that aren't doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I used to be very big on going to GitHub. I use it for more or less giving an idea. So if I need a user creation script for a Linux LDAP server to create the user real quick, mm-hmm. I'll go in to see how they formulate it, and then I'll just formulate it myself and then do the trials to make sure it works and make a test user.
Does it mean then that a good system administrator is also a very good programmer, so that they're able to do that securely?
So I do have some programming experience in my past, because I did go to uni and do some part of my course did have elements of programming. I wouldn't say you need it, but certainly I feel things like PowerShell, things like that, it's almost gone back a step, because things are becoming more and more, there's a requirement to need scripting skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, some of the stuff on GitHub, if it breaks, it's you're kind of out of luck, dead in the water, waiting for somebody else or your supervisor to get in. It's not fun when that happens.
Definitely not.
Do you think that big tech are a threat to your job? So you mentioned Microsoft a couple of times. We're thinking, you know, Microsoft, Google. Do you think that they could potentially start running automated updates and scripts that mean that you don't have a job in a few years?
No, I think there'll always be a need to have a systems administrator or that some sort of role along those. Like I say, I mean, that is I think maybe the job name has changed. I don't think necessarily systems administrator meets the role anymore.
Is it that the level of responsibility that you had 21 years ago hasn't changed? That you are still responsible for the perfect working of those systems,
yes,
in a secure manner?
Definitely.
So big tech may make improvements and bring out products, but it doesn't necessarily change the core part of that job.
I suppose there is more of a risk, really, if you think about it, of security breaches.
Because of the monoculture.
Yeah, because the thing is, you've got everything hosted on their servers.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a compromise or something like that, or a vulnerability and they do get hacked, then suddenly that's out of your control. You've had no control over that. So you are a bit sort of reliant on them keeping to their words and ensuring that they do provide a secure platform.
Because a lot of businesses do rely on 365 in the West, particularly in the UK, aware of. And I guess if one of the big data centres or two of the big data centres go down, we could potentially lose working days or working weeks.
I know that in Russia, when obviously the Ukraine war started, Microsoft pulled the 365 platform from Russia. So that must have had a massive impact.
Mm-hmm.
It must have done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they are very powerful. All of these big companies are very powerful.
Big tech, would it be like Microsoft or Facebook? Yeah. I'm going to be a little harsh towards Microsoft. And I used to be a big avid proponent towards Microsoft Azure. I still am. But back when I was working with it in 2018 and 2019, like, they didn't have Linux on there at all. It's all Windows minus Red Hat. Mm. Red Hat is, you know, like the Windows version of Linux for the most part, if you play around with their desktop environment. Yeah, like Microsoft, like everything from my time as a help desk was all Windows environments. And it gets so boring. It's all the same. It doesn't matter what year of Windows Server it is. It's not really refreshed or tailored. And then you hop into like the Linux side of it, you know, you could tailor almost anything. Like, you can do the free version of SolarWinds, like Zabbix, and run it off of Rocky Linux, and it works really well for what it is. And then you could do the Honeypot plugins to make sure if there's any breaches on the systems that are on it, they'll let you know. So it's depends on how much tailoring do you want in your environment, or do you want kind of the cookie cutter environment? So I think at end of the day, yeah, I could see Microsoft, you know, going, it's not going to support Linux. I could see that could be a problem in the future. Same with some of the other social media.
Do you see big tech as a threat to people who control their own computers, such as our users, when they go home in their own environment?
Oh, definitely. Because again, the same thing applies, is that, these companies potentially could push out something to all their users, corporate or home users. It doesn't matter. If they wanted to, you know, any minute of the day, they could deploy something, and it could have an impact throughout the world.
I definitely think there should be a little bit more competition, like with Mac and Windows. I'm not the biggest of fans, like the newer Macs, because if you're not able to service them, you have to take it to the Mac store just for them to diagnose and fix it. And that's a lot of money for one of those systems. And not being able to upgrade anything, it's not as green as I would like to say. Like, I think of Linux like as more of a greener alternative, because then you could reuse older hardware for servers and such and kind of boondock it with an old school 2017 laptop and put a new drive in it and run Linux, and it will run just as fine because of how light it is.
There's a whole movement online actually of taking really old mobile phones and putting Linux operating systems on them, and they're just amazing. So hopefully there's a whole load of countries out there where we just recycle all our iPhones to that can just get them up and running. That's a good green option, I think, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with the lithium mining, it's just, if you research into that, it's unreal to see how much just devastation it does to the ecosystem. It's just raw.
Have you heard of netiquette, and what are your own manners and standards of good practice?
How I approach coworkers, if I'm like screen sharing, I treat everybody as I want to be treated. If something goes wrong and they don't join like the meeting right on time, it's never a big deal for me, because I always try to keep my schedule as flexible as possible, because if something goes wrong, I'd rather be able to drop what I'm doing and get on it almost immediately to get it resolved and fixed if needed. And of course, that allows me to be flexible if I'm doing a update to, say, a VPN and needing to put VPN configurations onto the affected users' laptops. It helps to, you know, stage it and be flexible with them as well, because they have their own unique roles that they are covering, and you don't know how busy like the HR people are or the executives are. You don't want to just barge in and go, well, you need to make time for me. That's not going to fly very well for anybody in any industry. So I always approach everybody pretty respectfully, whether they're above me on the totem pole or below me.
Have you heard of netiquette, and what are your own manners and standards of good practice?
I've heard of netiquette. I can't think exactly where I would have practiced it, to be honest.
I think you do it all the time, because knowing you prior to doing this interview, you are a very, very polite and kind person.
Oh, thank you very much. I would imagine, you don't need to.
It's true. I would imagine that you're already clued up with your netiquette. But netiquette is essentially the ethics of our behaviour online. So it may not be illegal or unwarranted, but it's definitely something that you shouldn't do.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, like trolling and things like that, I think it's abhorrent.
For myself on the internet, I always try to, sometimes I get very direct and edgy with people, but I try not to be that way. It's usually with close-knit friends that I've known for many years that know that I'm like, okay, I'm going to say something kind of edgy to see what's going to happen and kind of walk on the thin line. But if I don't know you personally, I don't do that. It's common courtesy. Don't walk on the line if you don't know the person, because you'll fall through the ice. So that's typically what I do. My online presence isn't really all that big. For the most part, I just kind of read news articles at this point and go, oh, cool, Amazon is doing this. Reading about the whole Elon Musk and the whole Facebook debacle with Twitter going down the tube and this and that. And it's just like, you know, if we're going to talk open source, go to Mastodon. Mastodon's a pretty cool platform. It's very similar to Twitter, and I think it would be the better alternative versus going to the Facebook Twitter.
I feel you should treat everyone online and offline with respect. So, I think that's the problem, is some people have a different, completely different persona online and just, you know, use it as a way to mask their activities. And just be obnoxious with everyone else.
Or is it that their true self's being reflected because they're not being watched?
That is another way to look at it, to be honest. So, yeah, maybe people, you know, in real life sort of think, oh, you know, I've got to wear this mask. And then when they get home and, you know, suddenly the mask is off and they can be themselves. That's a very good point.
And especially if they don't understand something that I understand, I always love teaching people something new with computers, because IT is such a diverse industry that not everybody is going to have the same walk as you or work at the same companies as you did, but they are just as sharp and brilliant as you are. So it comes to the question is, just because you can network really well and do all the subnetting and stand up a network does not necessarily mean you're good with like laptops and endpoint management.
I'm going to read you some quotes, if that's okay, and just want you to comment on them. So this is from Fight Club. We cook your meals, we haul your trash, we connect your calls, we drive your ambulances, we guard you while you sleep. Do not fuck with us.
It kind of reminds me of the IT guy meme where the IT guy takes out the computer's I key and puts a black key. And the guy says, he gave me a black guy, a tough IT guy.
That's a good movie. I like that. But how do I think about that?
Does that represent sysadmins?
I guess so. I guess, yeah. I mean, I could... Yeah, caretakers, I suppose it does come across as that.
I mean, for example, if the NHS's sysadmin decided to quit and they couldn't find somebody, I think we'd all be in a lot of trouble if we were having an operation at the time. So they really do drive our ambulances and you know, provide our theatre and our film.
Definitely.
And our TV.
So I've got another one here from The Matrix. I say your civilization, because as soon as we started thinking for you, it really became our civilization, which is, of course, what this is all about. Evolution, Morpheus. Evolution.
Shoot, that brings me back to the whole AI topic of right. How everything's just rapidly going super quick. It's definitely wild times that we're seeing get to be part of the IT industry as a whole. Whether you're help desk or all the way up in the executive end of it, it's just kind of neat to see what's happening and how it's going.
Yeah, it's like the whole industry itself is going through this rapid evolution very, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. News articles, everything, it's just like, that's new. Okay, why is this new? I thought we were on that 2 to 4 year time scale. I'm still back on that from college back in 2018.
I keep feeling like I need to go back to university like right away, and I only just left. I feel like I need to go back every 2 years just to keep up at this point.
Yeah, I feel that too on a whole nother level. I wish we had more Linux courses lately too, because Linux is just with Red Hat. I think Red Hat was bought out by IBM too. Mm-hmm. And I think CentOS is not being updated. So it's like all these random things that are just happening. It's just like, okay, when's Rocky going next?
Evolution, Morpheus. Evolution.
Matrix, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And that's the AI talking to Morpheus there, explaining that the minute that you create an AI and you ask it to think for you, then it becomes you. It becomes its civilization in its own right. Hmm. It's an evolution. So is AI an evolution in our civilization as humans, or just in our computer technology?
I don't know. I'm still a bit out on the idea of AI at the moment. I'm sort of, you know, I don't know. I know sometimes there's been these sort of buzzwords going around, and I don't know. I think it will be big, but I just wonder at the moment, is it going to be as big as everyone thinks it is? I could totally be wrong.
So the last quote is from the wonderful Mr. Robot.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite shows to watch randomly. I think it's more exciting than most IT jobs.
They've made it look really exciting. It's mostly just filling out reports. The world is a dangerous place, Elliot, not because of those who do evil, but because of those who look on and do nothing.
Definitely interesting. Yeah, I would have to agree the world is a dangerous place, and it just continues to go in this darker and darker spiral to see how evil it can get with how people are acting, with the different types of crimes that are now happening with through the internet. So it's definitely an interesting thing, needless to say.
And I guess it's encouraging us to not look on while evil is done, and if, you know, to be aware and to maybe whistleblow if we feel that we have to.
Right, absolutely. Especially if it's over decisions in organizations level, like at the top, that says don't secure. Mm-hmm. That's the time to whistleblow. Like, no matter what, how you feel or think, it's the company's proprietary data that could kill them.
Right.
That's on the line at that point. So that's something I would say be a whistleblower moment.
Right. I did this recently, actually, in the last year. And I was working for a fairly medium-sized construction company. Don't know a lot about their IT. And they'd hired a cybersecurity person. I'm like, you don't have any security. Yeah, no, we don't care about that here. So I was like, okay, well, next time I'm with the MD, I'm going to have that discussion. Do you care about your security? Yeah, we do. Okay, but then like they got hacked catastrophically, and it was like, how much do you care about your security? Like enough to spend money? No. Okay, then I'm leaving, because if you're not going to spend any money, then this is a disaster that's going to happen again and again until you are gone and you are fined out of existence. It's quite scary to see, but they don't care about the jobs of the people that work so hard and keep them earning money, really.
Yeah, that is very intimidating. Yeah, working in transportation and all that, it's pretty scary if all your data gets stolen and you're tracked by GPS while moving the freight. Definitely not safe in that instance if you're hacked. So it's better to get some people eyes on you if that happens too. So yeah, security is becoming such a big thing, I feel, that a lot of companies just don't have the right skill set of people to get into those roles. It's difficult, especially here in the United States. It's unreal to see the statistics. Like the statistics compared to like my role to cyber right now is just different. I think there's more people for sysadmin roles than there are for cybersecurity. So the competition's way different. Blows my mind away. I have to humble myself every time I think about that statistic.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that saying that the world is a dangerous place, not because of those who do the evil, but those who facilitate it and look on and say and do nothing?
I know, I see what you mean. I mean, there've been loads of examples I'm not trying to get political here or anything, but you've only got to go back to like sort of like the Jimmy Savile case and things like that, where literally people were just watching on and at his bad behavior
and
ignoring it, basically.
Almost facilitating it.
Yeah, exactly. So it is an evil place. Yeah, definitely. I know that doesn't necessarily relate to IT as such.
It so does, but, and especially as a sysadmin, right? Because if you are the sysadministrator, or you work under a sysadministrator who's working for a big banking organization, for example, and they're selling data privately online, do you feel as a sysadministrator that you would be ethically, you know, bound to whistleblow, to give up your job, to walk out and to say, actually, he's selling your data online, I'm going to leave because I don't want to be here anymore? Is that something that you feel is all sysadmin should
be doing? I've been lucky in the sense that I've never had to deal with such a thing like that. But it has always, I mean, I've always felt in the past where I've been asked to look into somebody's, like, I don't know, browsing history or not. Mm-hmm. I feel, oh, what about if I find something or something like that? And I always feel, oh, I really like that person. But then you've got to kind of separate yourself.
Yeah, you might find something.
You might find something.
That makes you change your opinion on that person.
But luckily that hasn't happened.
Yeah, I definitely could see that too coming on in the future. I think the demand for ethical hackers is going to have to go up too. I know in my country, in the United States, it's not, ethical hackers are not very smiled upon, if you would. There's a lot of pop culture here in the United States that glorifies hackers, but not every hacker is a good person, and you don't want to be buddy-buddy with them because they can tend to ruin companies or individuals real quick with how much information that we put out on the internet. It's just unreal.
And that's why here we have this real definition between a white hat and a black hat. So I have to literally almost wear a hat and be like, I'm a white hat. I don't do any gray. I don't do any red. I don't do any black. I'm a blue team.
Definitely.
But I've often wondered what happens if you're in that situation. And it must happen a lot in our industry.
Yeah, Edward Snowden is a very keen example of that, I think, publicly.
And what about if the same, you feel it's right that I go, I hide it or whatever. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the public should know. You feel that morally you should tell people, but at the same time, you don't want to get somebody into trouble or...
Yeah, so completely torn between the ethics of our communities as our world, but also you may feel torn with that work colleague who you might have built a personal relationship with.
Exactly.
And that's a really poignant point.
Yeah, definitely.
But it is fun. You definitely get a kick when someone tries to break in and you stop them. That's a very good day at work. I think if you live in the negative and you think, oh God, someone's managed to get through my first defense, and you take a real big ego impact to that, you're going to have a bad time in it. But the way I do it is, okay, yeah, you got through my first wall. Let's see if you can get through, my soldiers and then my portcullis and then my, flaming pit of tar. And when you get finally win, you know that there's a lot more of them with a lot more resources than there are of you, that's a good day. So I think if you get the right mentality and you can think more positively about your work, then you're going to enjoy it. But there are some people that get into it and they're very depressed very quickly because they feel that they're never winning. And that's sort of back to sysadmin, that, you know, some people do go into it and they find that they're not appreciated or that the job isn't quite what they thought, but most seem to really enjoy it. And I think maybe if you agree, maybe that's your mentality, the way that you approach your job.
I approach my job pretty mildly. Even if things go wrong, like this past week with one of my automation scripts breaking on me, it wasn't a huge deal, but it was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm gonna have to, you know, spend like an hour on this just to get this back up and running, because this ain't running, someone's gonna ask me why you did my script break. So I don't really wanna have that question happen. So I'd rather get it done and then chat with my manager later, go, hey, this script broke, I got it working, we have everything in. I'm gonna keep my eye on it, make sure it stays working the next couple weeks. So usually that's how the conversation goes if I am being as proactive as I need. So I'd rather have the positive attitude and be able to follow through with what I'm doing versus getting offended that something I built broke. But things break all the time with Windows updates, Google updates, you name it. Anything can break at any given time. So it's important to wait for patches and then let it sink in as time progresses. So, and always check your work, whether you want to or not. It's kind of an important deal when you're automating.
The role of system administrators has changed drastically over the past 20 years. As we heard, I wanted to highlight some of the ways in which they've changed. The ever-evolving IT job role, System Administrator by Castning from 2021, found at redhat.com, is written by a sysadmin, and he makes consistently similar observations. He states, in this environment, sysadmin, IT consultant, and jack-of-all-trades operator are pretty much one and the same. There is no difference between a network administrator, operator, or systems administrator. You are the one guy for all the jobs that need to get done. A sysadmin is indeed the person who seems to hold all the systems together, carefully planning updates and migrations, backups, and even IT project management. They have an entire network map built in their heads in all its complexity, almost becoming a part of the network, a biological machine management system. There is so much pride and tenacity in their work, their mission. They are secret superheroes in every company and service around the world, keeping the modern age from crashing. They are a community always offering advice and warnings to each other to make sure that the flow of worldwide information affecting all systems, from banking to hospital care, remain consistent. Joel sums the mindset of this community up really well. For me, sysadmin is more than a job title or some role. It's a mindset, a mission, a part of your personality. We are often the unknown heroes who do their work unnoticed by the rest of their colleagues, saving the company's future once or twice every single week. Matt and Joel worked over the same decades and experienced similar changes to the role, which has evolved, but the task and responsibility remain the same, if not increased. Joel expresses those changes in a single line. Just because my tools and methods have changed over time, my job hasn't. Exploring the changing role takes us back to the earlier part of those careers, to the rapid advancement in computing, especially from the 2010 to 2020 period. Even then, virtualization had dramatically changed the role. The role had already moved from on-premises servers to cloud-based systems, an entirely new form of server management. In 2015, BizTech spoke to the then chief technologist at VMware, who stated, "No more planned downtime for hardware maintenance. Just move your workload from host A to host B and do what you need to do. You can even do this in fully automated fashion using maintenance mode. I wish I'd had that when I was managing hundreds of physical hosts in my early days. The adoption of virtualization led to a focus on other expanding areas within the sector, such as cloud computing and cybersecurity, both of which are highly specialized and rapidly growing still to this day. 8 years ago, the sysadmins echoed the same thoughts as our sysadmins do today. The role seemed dynamic, ever-changing, and likely always will be. BizTech spoke to three system administrators as far back as 2015, where those changes were already present, highlighting communication between sysadmins as vital. The role will change significantly over the next 3 to 5 years, just like it has in the past 10 years. There is less and less logic in hardware, more and more in software, and we see layers collapsing. But this also means that they can be colliding. More than ever before, collaboration and communication between different groups is important. The role will change significantly over the next 3 to 5 years, just like it has in the past 10 years. There is less and less logic in hardware, more and more in software, and we see layers collapsing. But this also means they can be colliding. More than ever before, collaboration and communication between different groups is important. A Parser article by Sean Burns from 2022 looked at the changes in the 2010s to 2020 period that impact the sysadministration role, and I tend to agree with them, and here are my reasons why. Bandwidth speeds increased dramatically from around 7 megabits per second in 2010 to around 124 megabits by 2020. With such a huge jump in speeds, it rapidly increased the possibility and advancements in the role of system administrators. It meant advancements such as cloud computing became the norm, throwing out your on-prem servers and adopting an entire new way of working, including the use of third-party companies to run vital systems such as AWS, Azure, and VMware. Most companies made that move during that decade. IoT and the Raspberry Pi. How many engineers have walked around and asked someone if they've seen a Raspberry Pi to an eruption of laughter from the entire office? We've all been there. No, it is not an edible in any fashion or way. It's a tiny little amazing invention that's as important to sysadmins as security professionals. It offers most computing functions on a portable chip, which can have a new operating system on it for as little as 50p and 2 minutes of your time. It can be used to run entire systems and, of course, hack them. The jump in technology made its way into everything from toasters to air temperature sensors. They were added more and more to the ever-expanding network, making full use of those increased bandwidth speeds and cloud computing. The 2010s was a decade in which attacks grew. There were vast amounts of new malwares being created, worldwide nation-state attacks, growth of powerful worldwide organized crime gangs that specialized in hacking, and the rise of small businesses and services being affected by ransomware. Some of those ransomwares hit headlines. They took entire towns offline at times. As a result, companies rightly panicked. That with a spate of large GDPR fines for companies in that decade who'd been hacked and found at fault meant that industries picked up the pace with security. When the industry was just growing and it was only beginning to train cybersecurity professionals, it's right when companies needed them the most. Sysadmins, as a result, often ended up with the role of a cybersecurity analyst. In my experience working in a smaller company as the only IT trained employee, this meant suddenly by 2017, this took up a large part of the sysadministration role. This was the same for so many sysadmins who had to divert a lot of their time and focus into cybersecurity in ways that they'd not seen before. And it's only increased to require an entire specialized person to join your team. Virtualization has happened. No longer is the server on site having a hardware fail. It's in the cloud, it's virtualized. Yes, it's easier to manage, but now there's far more data, and as a result, more servers.
and some segregated servers and processes, some IoT, building management systems. It has been virtualized and made easier to some regard, but the systems and the network itself is far more complex, and this will only increase. Mobile phones and their management became a big part of the role. For me, these are a security nightmare, but it does make server management much easier and remote. Often now, a sysadmin can solve an issue at 4 a.m. without the drive to the industrial state. But they do seem to spend some excess time helping people fix mobile phones that have been dropped or smashed and to get them back online when they've been locked out. Now add in IPv6, AI, quantum computing. These futuristic systems are already impacting the job. I think it will be another steep learning curve for our sysadmins worldwide, with another decade full of dynamic changes. They are on their mission to keep everything running, on and fully patched. So I want to say thanks to you, sysadmins. Thank you everywhere, from that one guy in the small company to the big sysadmin at the huge tech company. We see you. We notice you. You are not invisible. And today, we raise a glass to you all.
You've been listening to The Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk. Tune in again soon for another episode.
The Cyber Show.